Welcome to The Watcher's Diaries, a weekly podcast all about Buffy. I'm Mary.
And I'm Froggy.
And this week we're talking about season 4, episode 13, The Eye and Team. No announcements. Okay. That's easy. So we'll just go right in, I guess. So The Eye and Team, it aired February 8th, 2000, and our synopsis is, Buffy's relationship with Riley allows her almost total access to the initiative, but the more she sees, the more questions she has about their operations and the motives of Maggie Walsh. Meanwhile, Willow feels she's been abandoned by Xander and Buffy because they both have significant others.
Fairly straightforward.
It is fairly straightforward, but I'd like to argue that it's not her relationship with Riley that grants her access to the initiative. It's the fact she's the Slayer, yeah. Because if she was just Riley's girlfriend, this would not be happening at all.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know. I don't feel like Willow feels so much abandoned by Xander in this episode.
I didn't really get the feeling that it was Xander. It was
we're also going to talk a little bit about, like, Willow, Xander, and Anya in this episode, because yeah. I think we need to call Willow out on some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But first, what are our foreign titles?
Okay, so I am going to... Every country had a title. So
oh, yeah.
That is a good one. But I'm actually going to go in reverse alphabetical order, because my favorite one is actually the Armenian title.
Oh, so we're going to save it for last.
We're going to save it for last.
Okay.
So... Spanish from both Latin America and Spain is teamwork. Russian, I'm in team.
Okay.
Romanian, I'm in the team. Portuguese, my role in the team. I do like that one, though, because it kind of goes with some of the dynamics. Polish, I'm in charge here. Japanese, Buffy in the team. Italian, the trap, which is a good one for things that happen. Hungarian, the first in the team. A lot of these are just very poor translations. It just doesn't.
I'm loving them, though.
Yeah, yeah. German, appearance and reality. French, trapped. Finnish, top individual, which sounds like a game show.
It does, actually. The initiative's next top individual.
Czech is teamwork. And here's my favorite in Armenian. I am group.
I like that.
So you, like that. Yes. You see why I saved that last?
I do. I like that a lot.
And I even read that title to Kevin, and that has to be it, because it sounds like I am Groot.
It does. That's probably why I like it.
Yeah,
so
that's why I like it too, and that's why I did it backwards, because that would have been the first one, but I wanted to literally save the best one for last.
We do get a previously on, reminding us of the initiative, Spike's chip, the fact he can hurt demons, and Willow and Tara. And I don't think we mentioned it last week, but as of last episode, Tara will now be in every episode for the rest of the season. Then we're in Xander's basement of sadness, where Xander, Anya, and Willow are all playing poker. Willow calls upon the goddess Nyssa, goddess of chance and fortune, to bless her. Xander says using magic at the poker table is cheating. But Willow says she's not using magic. She's simply praying to a goddess that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Because I checked, and the only thing I got for Nyssa was Buffy wikis. So Tyche, is the goddess of fortune and chance in Greek mythology. And in Celtic mythology, Ain is the... it's Celtic, so I know I'm not pronouncing it right.
I believe it's Anya.
We could have made a great parallel there.
I know. And because I knew somebody who was Irish, and his fiance, that was her name.
Okay. So since we're not in a visual medium, it's spelled A-I-N-E. But as I'm sure everyone knows, in Gaelic and Irish and Scottish and in Welsh, nothing is pronounced the way it's spelled.
No.
So this is pronounced Anya, and she is the goddess of wealth, prosperity, and luck. But, you know, as we know from Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered, the writers aren't the best about pinpointing the exact god or goddess they meet.
No, I mean, and even as far back as Halloween, with Ethan praying to Janice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're playing poker. Anya's not really getting the rules of why they go through all the trouble for plastic discs. Xander tells her that normally the discs represent money, but as they have no money, he expects that to change, though, once his merchandise hits the street. That intrigues Willow, and she asks what he has in the boxes behind him. Drugs? It's not drugs, is it? No, no. Xander tells her that he is the newest local distributor for Boost Bars. Bars for health-conscious people. How Xander, did I forget that Xander joined an MLM?
Xander joined an MLM. Like...
And it fits, right? Because, mm-hmm. like, not to get too far down the anti-MLM hole, because there are plenty of podcasts that do that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times MLMs prey on people that are at a low point in their life or that aren't in the best place economically, promising them a chance to make more money than they thought possible, a chance to be self-employed, a chance to find a community. So it makes a lot of sense that Xander would have fallen for that.
It would have been really nice if they would have done a knockoff of Cutco knives, because that is one that really targets people in Xander's age range.
Yeah, and he could have easily run across them visiting the girls on campus, because they preyed on campuses a lot.
They did. Yeah. So I do wish that they would have gone, like, that would have been a great wink, wink, nudge, nudge moment. But doing the bars is also a good one.
And we get the great scene with Giles later.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He tries to get Willow to taste one, but she's not about it, as the taste of those things tend to be non-existent. Xander tries to sway her, but Anya interrupts. Can they get on with it? She has 3 of the K cards. Well, that makes Willow and Xander fold, as Xander wishes Buffy was there. Three-handed poker? Just not the same. Willow tells him she's probably with Riley, because spanking new boyfriend. And for a moment, I am sad that Giles isn't here to continue his pattern of learning about the Scooby sex lives
against his will.
Because Anya spills that she and Xander quite enjoy spanking. Xander was not expecting that and would like to talk about anything else.
That is always one of my favorite things about Anya spilling the details of their sex life. Because she's just, because of who she is, she's just very casual about it. And to maybe get a little TMI with my own, when we were watching this morning, Kevin said, he's like, you know, I always thought you were Willow, but now I think you're more Anya. To which I replied, a Willow in the streets and an Anya in the sheets.
Oh, I like that. We need to put that on something.
I was very proud of that.
I'm gonna make a note of that right now. So we don't forget it.
I'll have Kevin design stickers or something.
Yes. So he brings up Riley in the initiative. Riley, he's okay with. He seems nice. But the initiative? Xander's got a big old question mark over his head when it comes to that one. Yes. Good. Go with that, Xander.
Yes. And again, Xander. Like, he is being... Like, sometimes, you know, Xander comes off as petty because he's a teenage boy. But, like, he has very good instincts.
So I want to talk about that. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit, because I have noticed Xander is actually never outright rude to Riley.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually very nice to Riley.
Yeah.
He seems to like Riley a lot, because people are very quick to point out, well, like, Xander doesn't like any of Buffy's love interests. No, he doesn't like the ones that were douchebags.
Yeah.
Like, he seems to pretty much enjoy Riley's company. Like,
yeah, because
he calls him an oaf at one point, but Riley does have that, like, herd-der kind of energy to him.
Yeah, he's really, yeah. And, like, all of the stuff with, like, you know, the initiative and everything aside, like, he really does come across as a really good guy. Like, out of all of Buffy's boyfriends and love interests thus far,
mm-hmm.
personality-wise, and the way he, you know, he does get that little bit of toxic masculinity sometimes because she is strong and everything, but he never retaliates because of it. He doesn't talk down to her. Like, he more puts himself down because he feels bad about himself because he's not as strong as she is, but he never really takes it out on her. Like, he is a pretty decent dude for you know, now.
Yeah. Willow says they seem to fall in the good guy camp, being anti-demon as they are, but surely pro-ex-demon. She rushes to assure Anya of this. Anya still chooses to feel threatened, as she should. Xander says there's just a lot they still don't know. Like, what are they really up to? At the moment, they're in the woods, running a training exercise that apparently involves hunting Buffy. It takes them 42 minutes to find her, but she manages to neutralize them in 28 seconds. When told this, Buffy just says she got lucky. Still, Walsh says it's impressive. And Riley, he's super proud. Buffy tells him she was just being modest. He gets that, right? He does. Graham tells her good job. Also highly impressed. But Forrest, he just kind of pfft. Still, Riley tells her everyone loves her. Do they though? Because if the camera pans to Dr. Walsh standing beside the Humvee, she doesn't seem to be feeling the love. Credits. Still awesome. After the credits, we go to a campus coffee spot where Buffy and Willow are catching up. Buffy going on and on about the initiative and how wonderful Professor Walsh said she was. Apparently, it took the commando she used as a shield 2 hours to recover from his tasering. She then asks how Willow's night was. Normal. Non-action packed. She hopes tonight won't be too much of a letdown for Buffy. Action-wise. When Buffy doesn't say anything, Willow panics ever so slightly and says she does remember about tonight, right? The bronze, the gang. Of course she does, and she can't wait. She's missed them. They haven't really had a lot of hang time lately. Well, Willow says Buffy's been busy, fighting armies and with more romantic distractions. She notices Buffy is kind of looking past her, and Buffy says Riley just walked in. Oh, does she want to flag him over? Let him know she's there? No, she's just enjoying a good scare. Or a good stare.
Good stare. Yeah.
Anyway, about Willow's night. Right. Willow says they spent most of it at Xander's, teaching Anya to play poker. Sounds fun. It was, aside from the Anya part and the poker part. Okay, so this is where I want to say something. Because, like we said a few minutes ago, a lot of people like to harp on the fact that, like, Xander is outright rude or openly dislikes or is snotty towards, like, every person Buffy dates because he has, like, these unrequited feelings for her.
Mm-hmm.
And like we just said, you don't really see that happen with Riley.
No.
And I'm like, I'm sorry, but what is Willow doing?
Exactly.
Willow was horrible about Cordelia. And now she is snotty as all hell about Anya, and she will continue to be so.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she's bitter about Anya's whole existence because she's dating Xander. And if you want to play that game, then this is, of course, due to all of Willow's unrequited feelings because she is bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, no one ever wants to talk about the fact that Willow is horrible to everybody Xander ever dates.
Yeah, it's once again showing the double standard that the fandom has where every single thing a male character does is awful and the worst and blah, 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 blah. And the girls are all little rays of sunshine, which their personality, it's great. You know, it's fine that they're having the feelings they should. You know, it's okay that they're having feelings. But if we're going to discuss the way that one person acts, we need to also discuss the fact that everybody acts that way.
Yeah, like,
and it's a very human thing.
It is. And I mean, this core three, if you want to boil it down to the three who started it all, this core three is very wrapped up in each other's lives.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that most friends aren't, because they have these life and death situations. So it's always going to be weird when anyone comes along and pulls focus from those three.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you have new people showing up and they don't quite fit the dynamic that everybody's used to.
And so it makes sense that any of those three would have feelings about anybody else coming in. But that means we can't villainize any one of those three for those feelings.
Yep.
Anyway, Buffy says she thinks Willow's going to have to get used to a Twinkie. That's what Riley's having for lunch. Oh, he is so getting punished later. Sadly, Willow says everyone's getting spanked but her. Willow, maybe she wasn't joking back when she told everyone that she and Oz played Mistress of Pain every night.
And then at that point, Kevin was like, Okay, well, maybe I stand corrected. No, I really do like that moment where Buffy is staring at Riley and like she doesn't want to invite him over. She's just having that cute fluffy.
Yeah.
And then like talking about what he's having for lunch. Like it's a very cute relationship, real relationship moment. Like, why are you eating that? You need to eat better. But he is a 20 something, late teens, 20 something boy.
Yeah.
And even though he works for this military installation, he's still eating like he's a college student.
He's a college student who like works out way more than any other college student. Yeah. So he could probably eat that Twinkie if he wants.
Yeah. And yeah, he'll burn that Twinkie off at practice later.
Buffy looks at her confused and Willow says, "It's nothing," as we go to the cemetery, where Giles has come to visit Spike in his new crypt. Spike tells Giles to wipe his feet, and Giles, full of sass, apologizes for tracking mud all over Spike's mud. Spike admits it's a bit of a fixer-upper, and yes, I started humming the song right there. Uh-huh. Damn you, Frozen.
Name? I did too.
"It needs a woman's touch. Would Giles like to have a go at it?" Giles says, as much as he would love to spend the day trading barbs with Spike, he came for a reason. He owes Spike a debt of gratitude for the way he helped him. He owes him more than that. Right, 300. Giles hands it over, telling Spike he can count it if he likes. Don't worry, he will. As he does so, Giles wanders about the crypt, asking Spike if he thinks maybe his situation and the revelation that he can fight demons might be part of a higher purpose. This talking makes Spike lose count, and he wants to know why Giles is still there. They're done. His paying him concludes any business they had with one another, and so Spike wants nothing more to do with Giles or the Scoobies. Giles tells him that remaining in Sunnydale might make that difficult. Well, he and his will have to show a little restraint. And he doesn't want Giles coming back there the moment Teen Witch's magic goes all wonky or Xander cuts a new tooth. They're done. Honeymoon over. Giles leaves, and we go to a couple whose honeymoon is most certainly not over. But first, Teen Witch.
Yay!
1989 teen fantasy rom-com of sorts starring Robin Lively, who is the older sister of Blake Lively, aka Serena Vanderwoodson, aka Mrs. Ryan Reynolds, though I'm pretty sure in their relationship, he's actually Mr. Blake Lively.
Probably, yeah, yeah. I think he's Mr. Blake Lively.
Robin plays the main character, Louise, who discovers on her 16th birthday that she's a witch. She uses these newfound powers to gain popularity, and of course, hijinks ensue. It is a great movie. I love it. I was totally obsessed with it for a while.
I was going to say that's another one of those movies where people who, I mean, especially girlies our age, were like, that movie was everything.
Oh, yeah. I think I discovered it in Blockbuster when I was like 11 or 12 and just like rented it every Friday night for probably like a year straight.
Yeah,
it looks like it's currently on Amazon Prime. So do your guys selves a favor and go watch it.
Just do it. It's also like it's a girl who gets magic and she learns lessons. You know, she figured, you know, it's a good way to spend a Friday or a Saturday night. And I think we should watch it together.
I think we should. I also think the rap from that has been like making the rounds on TikTok.
Yeah, it's
weird. So like that's where that comes from, guys, when they're all in the street with the boom boxes and the take that.
Yeah.
This is the movie that comes from.
Yeah. Oh, I love that scene.
Yes, honeymoon. Buffy and Riley are definitely still in the honeymoon phase, standing close together, looking at each other all hard-eyed, as Riley tells her she doesn't have to do it if she's not ready. However, she assures him that she is ready. And more than that, she wants to. Now, we all know what we're supposed to think they're talking about.
Yes.
But it's not that. No, no. It's taking Buffy into the secret elevator.
Ooh.
And down into Initiative headquarters, which she is quite impressed with. Riley said it was big, but it's unreal. Not that she thought it was a fly-by-night organization, unless they can fly by night. Can they? Do they have jetpacks? Riley says he can't tell her. He is just so excited to be able to show her all this, to finally share the other half of his life with her. And they're about to kiss right there on the stairs when Walsh appears. Does Buffy like their little operation? She does. Yeah, it's very clean. Walsh issues her a visitor's badge, along with some documents to get her up to speed. Buffy was kind of hoping this whole partnering thing meant she never had to do homework again. Walsh tells her that's not homework. Those are classified documents. No way she can take them home. When she's done with them, she's going to have to eat them. Riley assures her Walsh is joking, and Walsh tells her not to worry. It doesn't happen often. They begin to take Buffy on a tour of a facility, showing her the pit where most of their experimentation happens. Did anyone else find it weird that they just do the surgery right there in an open pit?
That was a very, to be fair, that I believe was the point for what we're getting to later. Like, we personally need to see.
Yeah, no. God.
But yeah, it's...
Obviously, we need to see it. But they have, like, glass cells. You're not telling me they don't have, like... Like, even if it was an operating theater with an observation deck above where we could look... That's better than just a pit in the ground.
You know what? They don't always have the best idea.
So my only thought behind that when I was trying to rationalize it to myself is that in an open area like that, it would be easier to put them down.
Mm-hmm.
If the demons got too violent, because mm-hmm. you can have the guys with the Trent guns just standing there. So that was my only thought, that like maybe they do that because it's better to like put the demons down if they get violent and you're not like locked in a room with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I still, it was really weird. Whatever. Walsh tells Buffy about how they've been experimenting in behavior modification for the HSTs, making it so they no longer present a danger to humans. Buffy says she's seen... As they look at her, she quickly saves by saying, on the Discovery Channel, with gorillas and sharks, making them nice. They haven't seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Walsh isn't buying it, but she doesn't say anything. Buffy, eager to get away from that subject, points to something across the way. What's that? Walsh tells her it's the armory. She'll need to be cleared to use each type of weapon it contains. But she's sure, given Buffy's ability, that she'll pick it up. Don't pick that up. Walsh goes over to where Buffy is playing with what looks to be a teeny tiny camera, her face all big on the screen behind. She asks what it is, and as she places it back in the box, Walsh says, about $20,000. Instantly. You know what scene I'm about to reference.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So anyone who's watched the 90s X-Men cartoon, like the very first scene of that show is Jubilee breaking a video game with her powers. And the guy's just like, do you know how much that cost? And she's like, yeah, a quarter. It just instantly, my mind instantly went there.
Yep. Oh.
Riley tells her it's a CAMCOM, or camera communication device, soon to be standard issue. It'll give the wearer a direct line back to headquarters, allow them to see what's going on in the field. And, Walsh says, it measures the wearer's heart rate. Now, if they come this way, she'll show them the HST containment area.
Keep all of that in mind for later on in the episode.
Pretty much. As they walk away, Buffy mouths a sorry to Riley, and he assures her it's fine. As the tour wraps up, Buffy asks about the door we saw Walsh disappear behind last week. Walsh tells her it's a research wing, highly restrictive. She then gives Buffy her badge and her beeper, a beeper only they have the number to, and that only they will ever have the number to. Leaving them, we go to Willow and Tara, who are down in the lounge area of one of the dorms. Tara showing Willow a doll's eye crystal. It's a crystal Willow says she's been searching for her entire life, or at least since June. She asks Tara where she got it, and Tara says she thinks it belonged to her grandmother, that she found it in her attic. She wants Willow to have it. Again, I remember back in the day, like, not understanding where this was going yet, mm-hmm. and all this mentioning of, like, magic in her family and being very, like, sketchy about it and wanting to help Willow. And I really, really, honestly, truly believed in it. Well, like, Tara was from the future.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was there, too. Like, I found it in my grant. Like, it just,
yeah.
It really, looking back now, it is ridiculous, but
yeah,
like you're in a show with so much going on where you're like, you know what? I can see time traveler. And I mean, look, we're in the middle of a book where.
Yeah. Time travel's going on.
So.
Willow says she can't, not if it's a family heirloom. But if Tara ever wanted to try some spells with it, Tara suggests that night, but Willow can't do that night. She has plans. And she'd invite Tara along, but it's a really specific set of people. She wouldn't want Tara to feel out of place or uncomfortable. Tara understands and heads off to class, as does Willow. I see Tara still doing the bit of grunge skater chick thing. I'm going to track this. I'm going to see when they really start committing Tara to the hippie goddess look.
Yeah.
We all know and love. We're then back at Initiative headquarters with Walsh disappearing behind that restrictive door. She heads into room 314, where we see the doctor from earlier. He asks how the tour went, and Walsh is unsure. She's unpredictable. The doctor says she's a risk. She has to go. Maybe. How's their baby doing? Good. Motor functions, brainwaves, all good. And now we see it. See just what Walsh has been working on. Adam, a Frankenstein's creature-esque creation, stitched together from various demons, and I'm guessing dead commandos. A super soldier. She tells him soon it will be time to wake up, greet the new world. The Bronze, aka the no longer small children nightclub. Willow and Anya are sitting at a table when Xander comes up wearing a Captain America shirt.
Yay.
I love it. I love it because it's Captain America, but I also love it because we're dealing with like secret government projects creating super soldiers. Yes. Good. Yes. That's just a great tie-in right there.
I don't know if they did that on purpose.
I don't know, but it works well.
I feel like that's one of those things where you would go up to them and we talk to them about, hey, you know, it was great. You had Xander in this Captain America shirt where, you know, you're dealing with super soldiers here. And was that on purpose? And they're just like, yes. Yes.
Totally.
Yes, it was absolutely on purpose. When was I always forget when the creator was writing for...
So he was mostly an X-Men writer.
Yeah.
But let's see if we can find out what years. I don't want to know. I want to know when he was writing, not when he did the movies.
Yeah, because it's also a fun tie-in too when you consider that later on down the line
It looks like it was after Firefly. In 2004, he created the comic book line Astonishing X-Men. Mm-hmm. He did the 24-issue run, and then in 28, handed over the reins to the writer, which they took one storyline from that comic, which was the cure for the mutation, and that made it into Last Stand.
Okay.
And then he went to do Runaways. He wrote short pieces for Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. He contributed to Civil War. He did a story for the 75th anniversary of Captain America, Sam Wilson.
Okay.
And he's a couple of the characters that came, Blindfold, Armor, Clara Prast, Special Agent Abigail Brand, and the Sword Organization were all stuff he brought to the comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, no, he I wasn't. Knew, like-
Yeah,
back I at this
I can,
time.
Yeah, I couldn't. I can never remember. Like, yeah, I knew that it was in the early part of the 2000s that he was writing for Marvel. But yeah, it is interesting to have Xander in a Captain America shirt when he will later go on to do two movies featuring Captain America.
I just love when everything ties together.
It's like poetry. It rhymes.
Anya tells Xander that he hasn't paid any attention to her all night. All he's done is peddle those bars. Well, that's because selling the bars get him money. Money allows him to take Anya nice places, buy her pretty things. Anya likes that, and so gives him permission to go sell more. Oh, well, the one he's currently eating is the only one he has on him. So, besides, it's getting pretty late. They should probably go. Go? No! Willow says they can't go. Buffy isn't there yet. Yeah, but she's an hour late. Xander doesn't think she's coming. He thinks she got caught up with Riley. No, Buffy promised she'd come. She said she was even looking forward to it. And she does show up, eventually, with Riley and the other commandos in tow. Something Willow is not that excited by. It was supposed to be just them, the Scoobies. However, when Riley says he hopes they don't mind, Willow is polite as polite can be, saying of course not. Riley introduces the crew, and we get the names of two new commandos, Kevin and Jay. They then say they're going to get drinks, and does anyone want anything? Buffy orders a Coke, but the rest say they're fine. Anya says she and Xander were just going away to dance over there. She stands and pushes him onto the floor. As everyone else departs, Buffy notes that Anya seems a little jumpy. Willow tells her the commanders make her nervous. Ex-demon issues. Right. Well, Buffy didn't think they'd mind. The guys were throwing the celebration for her, and it made it impossible not to invite them. Oh, that's exciting. It's just Willow thought it was going to be just them, the core gang. If she knew it was a free-for-all, she would have invited someone too. Buffy says she's really sorry. Her bad. Totally. So who was Willow going to invite? What? Willow said she was going to invite someone. Who? No one. So why were they celebrating? Buffy tells Willow she's in. The initiative. Got the grand tour and everything. Willow looks a bit concerned by that, asking Buffy what she means by she's in. Is she joining them? No. Not exactly. But it does mean when she goes on patrol, she'll now have heavily armed backup. And her boyfriend gets to go to work with her. So big perk. Willow thinks Buffy should be careful, not rush into this. She thought she liked Riley. She does. She's talking about the initiative. There's still so much they don't know. Buffy knows that. Like what? Like what is their ultimate agenda? They go around neutering vamps and demons. For what? To reintroduce them to society? Get them jobs as bag boys? Not to mention the whole 314 thing that Ethan mentioned. Yes, because a man that worships chaos and tries to kill you is a man you can trust. Bad info or not, Willow still thinks Buffy needs to be careful. That there are questions one needs to ask before they enlist. Before they can get any further on this topic, Buffy's beeper, along with the beepers of all the commandos, goes off. When did she get a beeper? Riley returns to the table and tells Buffy that's them. Mother wants them. Promising Willow they'll talk later, she follows Riley out. So what's the emergency? Okay, two things we need to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
One is subtle thing that I love. I doubt it was intentional. And the other is this whole mother thing.
Yeah.
So one, I love that Xander is eating the health bars he's supposed to be selling, because you know who ends up buying most of the stock in an MLM? The sales associate. Who,
yeah.
So right on track. Again, don't know if it's intentional or it's just to have Xander eating, but I like it.
Because you have to, in order to have stock, you have, like, especially with those food ones, like, you need to buy the stock. It's the same thing with anything that's like the beauty supplies and stuff. Like, you have to buy it. So then you're stuck with all this stock. And now what do you do with it? You just end up using it.
Yeah. Okay. And second is this, like, mother thing. This bothers me because this is a theme they like sprinkle in there, but they never actually commit to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I needed them to go all in with this.
Yeah.
Because that would have made everything that much more twisted, but they like half-ass it and it annoys me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's another one of those little threads that they start, but they never take anywhere.
There's going to be a lot of things that come up in this episode that annoy me because they seem like half-assed last-minute additions.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get there. At headquarters, the team and Buffy are getting briefed. One of the docs going over the threat, a Polgora demon, and its main defenses, spear-like things that jut out from the arm. He tells the group that it is imperative they do not damage this spear thing. Why? Buffy wants to know why they can't damage them. In her experience, things get broken when fighting for your life. Better its things than hers, or the commandos. Also, what does it want? A sacrifice? Treasure? It's usually easier to predict the movements if she knows what it's looking for. They tell her it doesn't have reason. It's just destructive, and they need to bring it back whole to study it. Forrest is so done. Every time they pan to him, his face is just like this bitch.
See, and that's what I love about Buffy, especially because she is a girl that was brought into the boys' world. Mm-hmm. And the boys are so used, especially because they are military. They're so used to, we get the order, we do the, you know, we get the order and we fulfill the order. Meanwhile, Buffy, because she's so used to every demon has some sort of purpose that they are looking to do, you know, all the hours and hours of research to find out why we're having to get rid of these people, these demons. And that's like, it really is such a great contrast between Giles and Walsh and, you know, the Watchers, Slayer, and the Initiative.
It is. I like that Forrest looks like especially done when, like, Walsh suggests that Buffy may want to change into something less colorful.
Yeah.
And Buffy's just like, no, I'm fine. I've patrolled in this halter many times.
Yeah, this is the scene where she has that shirt that ties in the back. Is this? Yeah. That? Yeah. Yeah. Because then that'll, you'll see more.
We're going to talk about that really weird edit in a moment. Like, that edit just did not do it for me, but we'll talk about it.
Well, yeah, we'll get there.
Right. Well, Riley gives out the team assignments, and Walsh reminds them that this is what they call a zap and trap, a capture, not a kill. She asks if anyone has any questions, and yes, once again, Buffy has raised her hand. We don't get to hear what she asks, though. Instead, we go to Willow, who has gone to visit Tara. She basically apologizes for not inviting her along, saying that she does understand the irony of the whole situation, as her friend ditched her for another group she hangs out with, ending the whole thing early. But if it's not too late, Tara would still like to do something. Tara opens her door, inviting Willow in. On patrol, Buffy is now certain Walsh hates her due to all the questions. Riley says no, she's just not used to it. Probably because Buffy barely spoke in her class. But Walsh likes her. She liked her even before Riley did. Oh, well then maybe she should get her a present. Riley says as much as he would love to discuss this, he doesn't have Buffy's reflexes and therefore needs to focus, okay? Okay. What does he mean Walsh liked her before he did? He didn't like her? Elsewhere, Forrest is really not helping. Sure, he's been made team leader, but he's Riley's second in command, not some girl.
I do love jealous best friend.
I do love jealous best friend Forrest, but I'm also like, the toxic masculinity runs deep.
It does. But also this also feels a little catty, like girl.
Oh, it's very catty. Like, yeah. Like Forrest is the king of petty on this day.
Yeah. And I do love Forrest, and like he is one of my favorite of the side characters for this season.
Yeah, I'm a little partial to Graham, but they're both wonderful.
Yeah.
Graham reminds him that the girl in question is also Riley's girl, but Forrest doesn't care. It's not right. Maybe Riley wanted to give him a chance to get out from under his shadow. Forrest says he is not under anyone's shadow. Graham tells him to relax. He was just teasing. He then gets something in his sights. The target? No. Spike. He passes Forrest the glasses, who is all, hello, Hostel 17. He sends two of his commandos to grab Spike, but he manages to get away. Not before Graham hits him with a tracker, however. They radio Riley to update him on the situation. Reception is spotty, and so as he struggles to make out what Graham is saying, he misses the Polgara demon coming out of the bushes. Buffy calls his name, and yeah, so what happens next is just a really weird cut.
I get what they're doing here.
Yeah.
There's, like, it's saving time. It's one of those, like... where you have a group of people and you're explaining a plan, and as you're explaining the plan, you see them executing it. So I see what they're doing with saving time here, but it is very awkward.
Yeah, because it goes between the slow motion fight of Buffy and Riley fighting the demon, and that's cut with Buffy and Riley having post-hunt sex. And it's all with this, like, weird 80s synth music. And I, like you said, I get what they're trying to convey. Mm-hmm. Like, they work great as a team. It kind of turned them both on. The whole, like, hungry and horny after slaying.
It's the
but
whole
the like, execution
face,
yeah. was just really awkward.
It was. Yeah, I agree. And we were laughing about that when we were watching it this morning. It was, yeah. And then, like, again, with that top that she was wearing.
Yeah. And like him undoing her boots.
Yeah. Like that top, like, and that top was put in that scene just for so that you could see Riley's hands untying.
Yeah. No, it's very awkward. Like, great intention, but just very awkward execution.
It was a very late 90s teen show.
Oh, yeah.
Execution there.
I also forgot, like, the really creepy bit with, like, Professor Walsh watching them get it on.
Mm-hmm.
Because she has cameras in all the commandos' rooms and mm-hmm. just, ew.
Yeah. Yeah, this episode definitely highlighted how creepy she is.
Which, again, is just, like, too little too late.
Oh, yeah.
I think we should have gotten more threads of this as we were going on.
Especially, like, when we get to the end of the episode.
Yeah. So the next morning at Giles's, Xander's trying to convince Giles to buy some of his boost bars. Giles is so not interested.
Poor dad.
Not even after Xander lists the flavor. Anya thinks he needs to skip the normal sales pitch and just tell Giles he wants the money to buy her pretty thing. He'll understand. Giles relents and agrees to try a walnut maple. He immediately spits it out. And tell Xander to leave his home. Like, it's so bad. He is kicking Xander out.
It always reminds me that scene reminds me of like our friend group whenever I have a pun and you just tell me to get out of your home.
Go. Xander says it's the texture, isn't it? Maybe he's more a cherry berry guy. Let him. There's a pounding on the door and Giles goes to answer it. But before he gets there, Spike runs in, blanket draped over him to keep him from burning up in the sun. He yells for Giles to close the door and Xander says Spike may want to give up the morning jobs. Spike tells him the soldier boys are out in force. He keeps trying to lose them, but they keep coming. Okay, and why is that Giles' problem? Especially as Spike said he had no desire to have anything to do with them anymore. Spike said that? Xander is hurt. Spike says they need to help him. Why? Because it's what they do. They're the goody good guys. True. But why should Giles specifically help? Because Spike helped him when he was a demon. Out of the evilness of his heart? Well, no. He made him pay. Oh, okay. He hands Giles back what's left of the money. He spent the rest on blood and smokes, neither of which he'll see again. As Giles puts the money in a box in his desk... That was weird. Spike tells him to come on, circle the wagons. No time for layabouts. Only that is exactly what Buffy is doing. Laying about with Riley in his room. Only as she wakes, you can see in her face for a split second that she's not sure Riley will be in that room. After all, the last two times she slept with someone for the first time, she woke to an empty bed. An empty bed covered in red sheets. Nice touch. But no, Riley's there, and he's surprised that she's surprised. They kiss, and an alarm starts going off. Buffy tells him his robot bird sounds hungry. He says it's just a reminder to take his vitamins. Again! Something I feel they should have done more with.
Exactly.
I really do feel the more we watch the episodes with it and the more we talk about it, like, I feel like so much of the stuff with the initiative was decided on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have no indication until now. And we won't really see this pay off until, I think, next episode. That Walsh has been drugging them.
Yeah.
And so, like, if we had just seen, like, one or two, like, even Graham or Forrest at an earlier time, like, at the lunch table taking, like, some sort of medication.
And it would have been, it would have also been a great thing for, like, Buffy. So she sees, like, okay, going back earlier in their relationship and everything, she sees Riley taking, quote unquote, vitamins. And then at some point, she is with all of them. And all of them have to, like, stop and take their vitamins. So it would be one of those great moments where her with her senses and, you know, being able to pick up on things would be like, something is weird here.
Yeah. So again, like, this is kind of like the whole mother motif. It's kind of half at. This is why I don't really like the initiative as a storyline. It seems very half done.
It's one of the initiative storyline is one of those where the setup is better than the payoff.
True. Very true.
Leading, like everything leading up to this where you see commandos, you see, you know, Spike has his thing where he escapes from them. Everything was set up so nicely. But then once Buffy gets into like finds out about Riley, it doesn't really propel anything. Like, you don't really get anything. And again, like, that's another one of the problems with the show is they set up a lot of things, but they don't really know how to pay it off.
He takes his vitamins and Buffy says he really is regimented. We then learn that Riley's just dumb.
He is dumb.
Does what he's told, no questions asked, just happy to serve and protect the people. Buffy doesn't get it. How can he not want to know? She decides to take a chance and ask him about 314, right as his phone conveniently rings. Surprise, surprise, it's Walsh. There's a situation and she needs him. As he gets dressed, Buffy asks, "What's up?" He doesn't know. He really does not ask questions, does he? Riley says he'll leave that for her. Down in headquarters, Riley goes to meet Walsh. But as he does, he stops and peeks through the window of that restricted door. There it is, 314. Not that he can do anything about it, because Walsh joins him just then, asking if he got lost. He says he didn't, and Walsh hands him a piece of paper. She told Beta Team to suspend tracking of Hostel 17 until his arrival. He's to meet them at those coordinates. He heads off, and as he does, she says to make him proud. She then goes to check on Adam and our friend the Doctor, who is removing the arm of the Polgara demon to, you guessed it, put on Adam.
Mm-hmm.
She tells the Doctor they have a problem. The Slayer? She's becoming a liability. She knows of 314, and she has too much influence over Riley, Agent Finn. So then they move to the contingency plan. She sees no other choice. Too bad. The Doctor said she could have been a powerful ally. Finn's gonna take it hard. She knows. It's why the sooner the better. The sooner the better. They're really flip-flopping with Walsh's character here.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I dislike the initiative, I think we needed a few more episodes of Buffy in the initiative.
Yeah.
Because we go from this clear, like, she doesn't do the things the way we do, to she's a liability, to like, oh, this sucks. And maybe she is like maybe Maggie is feeling a bit of guilt. And doing that all within one episode doesn't really work for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It would have, again, and I know that part of it was they had they only had Lindsay Krause.
Yeah.
For a certain amount of time.
Yeah, because we'll talk about that a little bit at the end. But the plan was always for Walsh to die because of Lindsay's schedule.
Yeah, yeah. So like it really would have been nice if they could, but you know, they maybe could have pushed the timeline up a little further with Buffy getting into the initiative.
Yeah, because like I said, a lot of like the plot points in this episode seem like they're coming too fast.
Yeah.
Back at Giles's, they're working on getting the tracker out and discovering it is, in fact, a tracker thanks to Xander and his pseudo-soldier memory.
And I like that he brought that up.
Like, I will forever love my... I think this will become my favorite thing in the show, is the forever mention that, like, what happened that night, people will always remember.
And I like that he mentions that it was from that night. I love, yeah. Because I do like him reminding people, because if he didn't bring it up, if he didn't mention that it was from Halloween, people would be like, oh, well, how does Xander know this? Like, people would conveniently forget.
Yeah.
And the people who hate Xander, which is just like, I know, I get it. I get why, but he is not as terrible. He is not an incel. Like, please.
And it always makes me sad. As much, I love that Xander will forever bring this up. I love the constant reminders. But it makes me sad that we never had a moment where, like, Buffy just lays down some 17th century knowledge.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, just randomly knows, like, something about needlepoint or, like, a random poem or, like, what fork goes where because it's in her memory from that night.
Yeah, I really would have loved, like, because I love that Xander mentions that it's because of that, like, he remembers. But I would love for Buffy to do it more subtly at, like, her and Giles are looking at something and she just drops this knowledge and he looks at her like, how do you remember that? Like, yeah, why do you know this?
Or like when she was setting the table for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Proper table with like salad forks and just Giles is just like,
Yeah. Because she does have, like, and like a lot of like her slayer abilities and her skills, like she's very casual about everything.
Yeah.
When she knows how to do things. So like, she might not even remember that this is why I know this information.
Yeah. Xander says the commandos are most likely coming their way. And Giles says they need to find a way to buy them some time because he's not a surgeon and that's in deep. Buffy returns to the dorm to find it empty. Like no one slept there last night at all. Willow comes in a moment after her, confirming it. Looks like they both spent the night out. Buffy apologizes for bailing, and Willow says, it's fine. She begins to say something else, but Buffy's beeper goes off. They really keep her busy, huh? Yeah, she has to go. She'll see her later, okay? Okay. Buffy leaves, and the phone rings. It's Giles. Did he need Buffy? Because Willow could go chase after her. No, actually, it's her he needs. He needs her to do something. A small job. Reconnaissance. That's what Walsh tells Buffy as they walk along the floor at headquarters. Probably a waste of a Slayer's ability, but Buffy assures her it's fine, that she's up for a little action, doesn't matter how small. Walsh tells her they have a possible level 3 threat in the sewers. Level 3, low danger, minimal aggression, probably raccoons. As she hands her a taser gun, Buffy says she really doesn't like raccoons, does she? They're always prepared. She hands Buffy the camcom and says all she needs to do is get a visual. Once she does, Walsh can advise her from there, okay? Okay. Only, there's still some stuff Buffy isn't real clear on. Well, once she gets back, they can have a chat. Great. Buffy goes to head out before turning back. She's not supposed to salute her, is she? Spike is totally drunk. Because they did give him, like, alcohol in the previous scene to start numbing the pain.
Yeah.
So he's totally drunk, and Willow is working a spell as Giles continues to operate. Xander asks Giles just what the spell is supposed to do. Giles says if it works, it will ionize the air and disrupt the tracker's signal. Well, a moment later, there's a light, a bunch of light bulbs burst, electricity cracking. The air is now definitely ionized as all their hair is sticking straight up. Which means Riley Forrest and the others have lost their signal. But they do know it was coming from a populated area. And so they decide to head back and change into civilian clothes before continuing the search. Down in the sewers, Buffy is on the hunt. She enters what looks almost like a little den area. As she looks around, she hears snarling and asks if Walsh is getting it. Possible HST. No, wait. Make it definite. And he brought a friend. They seem to... Buffy gets a good look at them and realizes they're the same kind of creature that were on the tables being experimented on when she took her tour.
In the middle of the weird, huge area.
She goes to shoot them, but her gun backfires and shorts out. And the grate to the sewers slams shut, locking her in.
Huh.
How odd.
I know. It's very, very odd and convenient.
Despite the burn on her hands from the gun, Buffy launches into action, fighting the two creatures, both of whom have axes. Buffy knows this fight is being observed, and we actually see most of the fight the same way Walsh does via monitor. One seems to close in on Buffy, and next we see Buffy's heart meter slowly goes to zero before flatlining. Taking a sip of her coffee, Walsh looks around to see if anyone else noticed. Now, dressed like average college boys, Riley and the others are back on patrol, attempting to hunt down Hostel 17. They're closing in on the tracer, narrowing it down to a 2-block radius. Funny that, like, Riley doesn't put together that he's back in Giles's neighborhood, because he was just there last episode.
Yeah, he's dumb, though.
He is kind of a dumb boy. Inside, Willow says the spell is lifting and they need to hurry. Thankfully, Giles has it out. Right as Forrest locks onto it, he points them in the right direction as Xander hurriedly flushes it down the toilet. Forrest sees the tractor move and says it's coming right at them. Closer, closer, and it went right by. Riley figures it out pretty quick, says the tracker was flushed. Which, okay, maybe it was the speed it was moving, but they didn't seem concerned about the speed when they thought it was moving above ground. So why didn't they just assume a vampire would be moving through the sewers to avoid daylight?
They're dumb boys.
They're dumb boys.
I mean, that's really the only explanation for a lot of stuff is they are...
Because I thought they were going to, like, jump down in the sewers, but no, they're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, maybe it was the way that it was moving.
Maybe. Like, maybe when they thought about it for a second, they're like, oh, wait, that's too fast even for a vampire to run.
Yeah.
But speaking of the sewers, with the camcom on the floor, Buffy goes to town wailing on the creatures. She gets one down, but the other is holding strong, till it steps in the water to go get its axe. That's when she throws the faulty taser gun in with it, electrocuting them. But the problem's not over, because as she stands, it's clear Buffy understands what has happened here, how she was set up. Returning to headquarters, Riley goes to tell Walsh about Hostel 17, but she interrupts him, telling him that something terrible happened. It's Buffy.
Ugh.
She's dead. Two of the hostels, they escaped into the sewers. Walsh tried to tell her to wait, but she insisted she was fine, that she didn't need backup. Riley is devastated, and Walsh, she tells him she's so sorry.
I love her cheesy acting here.
So much. That Buffy, she was something special.
And especially because Lindsay Krause is such a good actress. Like, I always like really good actors and actresses who have to act suspicious and cheesy and like over the top for a scene.
Yeah, this whole thing would probably work better if Buffy wasn't currently picking up the camera and looking directly into it.
Yep.
Riley sees this, but says nothing.
Yeah.
Not until she speaks. Buffy tells Walsh the little recon she sent her on wasn't raccoons. It was her, trapped in the sewers with two of her pet demons. And if she thinks that's enough to kill a slayer, well, she doesn't really know what a slayer is, but she's about to find out.
I love it. And I love, I also love Riley letting Walsh continue with with her whole speech. Like, I love when somebody finds out that the person who's talking to them is full of shit, but just lets them dig themselves deeper.
Stone-faced, Riley looks from the screens to Walsh before beginning to walk out. Walsh calls after him, calling him Riley, Agent Finn, ordering him to stop, but Riley does not care. He's done. Spike, now all sewn up, Giles tells him it would be best to leave Sunnydale once darkness falls. Spike says he's not going anywhere, not till the doctors fix what they did to him. Xander says, sure. Just explain to them that he misses killing and torturing people. Does he think that will work? Giles sighs. He does not know why he is telling this to Spike. But as long as the initiative is in operation, it's not safe for him there. No, Buffy steps out of the shadows, having just arrived. It's not safe for any of them. We end this episode in good old room 314. Walsh looking at the near-completed Adam and promising Buffy a fight. She's worked too long, too hard to let some little bitch ruin everything. And once she's gone, Riley will come around. He'll see that it was for the greater good.
The greater good.
And if he doesn't, well, first things first. Remove the complication, and her sentence dies as she's run through with a skewer. She turns to find Adam awake and behind her. As she falls, she gasps his name, only for him to respond with, "Mommy." I had a moment of like, should we talk about Adam this week, or should we leave it for next week? Let's leave it for next week, because next week we're going to get to really know Adam.
Yeah, we can leave it up in the air with this. I love, again, this kind of reminds me of Spike's villain speech being interrupted by the initiative. So I always love...
This is like the season of monologues getting interrupted.
I always love it, though. I love a monologue because it's always, you always think about like all the Bond villains that were constantly going on their monologues and were never interrupted.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I love a good, love a good monologue interruption.
So yes, that is the end. Just a few tidbits. One, like we said earlier, it was always the plan to kill off Walsh and to have her be killed by one of her creations. One, because of timing with Lindsay. And two, because they were committed, like, while the initiative was kind of half-assed, they were very committed to this whole Frankenstein motif. Mm-hmm. Someone makes a creature, loses control of it. So that was always the plan. Sadly, I do think the initiative storyline suffered because of that, but that was always the plan. Also, both the Polgara demon and Dr. Engelman, the doctor that was working on Adam, were named after users on the Bronze.
Yes, yes.
I love that. It's because, as you guys know, I've mentioned many times before, that was my favorite place to hang out back in the day. So I just love that the writers and the team really loved the fans and really loved to show them how much they love them. And that's it for this week.
Yep.
Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time when we take on season 4, episode 14, Goodbye, Iowa. Until then, check out our various social media channels, all of which will be listed in the show notes. And if you like the show and you want to let us know it, you can subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to your podcasts, or write to us directly at thewatchdiaries@gmail.com. Bye!
Bye!